You're listening to the Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Brandon Wild's in the ball game. Farrell Cooper comes in motion. They hand it to Cooper. Cooper running left side. Now flipping it back to Ellington. Throwing for Connor. Into the end zone. Caught. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Connor Shaw. From 10 yards out, it went Cooper left side. Ellington back to the right. Ellington to Connor Shaw.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all you Gamecocks for coming down here. You were the difference. Big difference. Hey, these two Capital One bowls in a row are pretty nice, but that state championship ain't bad either.
Hello, Gamecock Nation. Welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 61, the first episode of 2014. I'm your host, Buck. I am coming to you from North Atlanta. T-Bone is coming from upstate South Carolina, and the G-Man is in the Midlands. And together we form the Bermuda Triangle of Gamecock Sports. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
It's this vortex where topics go and never come back out. So
it's a polar vortex of sports topics.
Yeah, one might say that, to coin a phrase or to use a coined phrase. How has the polar vortex been in South Carolina anyway?
Ridiculous.
Has it really?
I think we were at 9 degrees one night.
Yeah.
Things are happening up here that I never thought would happen. And the weather's bad, too.
Yeah. Hey, the entire lake is frozen, if that tells you anything.
Your lake?
Frozen.
The lake that your estate sits on?
Right.
Yeah, my estate. Right. Yeah.
The lake that he sits on, it doesn't have a name. He's not, like, on a lake that was named after some politician. No, it's the lake.
It's just his lake. So. Yeah,
it's frozen, and I had a pipe burst yesterday.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. We had that happen in our old house. So I bet the listeners are just riveted by this conversation. So anyway, Happy New Year, everybody, and we're gonna talk a little bit about just the events of the past week. It's been a pretty exciting week for the rubberchickensblog.com and for TRC, and a lot of activity going on. But first, we started off the year on January 1st with the Capital One Bowl, and G-Man, I guess we owe you an apology, or we need to tell you that you were right, because on our last podcast, T-Bone and I were just kind of hemming and hawing about, it's just another Capital One Bowl, not a big deal, and, weren't really excited about it, and even had a comment on the blog from the Clapping Monkey, who that's the handle of the person who commented on the blog, called himself the Clapping Monkey, who said he turned the podcast off because G-Man was the only person who was being positive about the Capital One Bowl.
Which I think this is a milestone. I don't think we need to let this slip by. I think that's the first time anything we have done in a podcast has motivated anyone enough to do anything.
right.
It actually, he Good. Felt strongly enough to shut our nonsense off, and I think we ought to celebrate that.
Right, yeah. We've made an impact in somebody's life.
I want to get back to the point where you guys were going to apologize and acknowledge my greatness on the podcast. So go ahead and get back to that.
We already covered that.
Yeah,
I
think that's already been addressed. But anyway.
I see.
So I think, going back to that, I think going into the game, I think what it was I didn't – there wasn't an excitement, at least for me personally. I'm just talking about me. And I think maybe T-Bone felt a little bit. There wasn't an excitement around that game like there is for the Georgia game or for the Clemson game.
/ Crouching Monkey turns off podcast.
Right. But then by the end of it, it was a fantastic football game, first of all. And then by the end of it, it was really kind of emotional. I'm going to use the word emotional. I didn't cry. I think you guys did. I think you both admitted that you shed a tear at the end of it. But
I was chopping onions.
Right, right. But, you know, I don't know if you guys read what Connor Tapp wrote over at Garnet Black Attack, but it was pretty good. It kind of summed it up. It talked about how...
Wait. You read those guys?
Well, I mean, I have to be exceptionally bored. And it's like...
I can't believe you admitted that. But anyway,
go ahead. I mean, I've been to all my favorites, and then I'm like, oh, you know, I'll go see what those guys are doing over there. But he wrote a really good piece on how if you wrote a script for this game, it really couldn't have gone any better. I mean, the star of the game, far and away, was Connor Shaw. You know, Jadeveon Clowney had – I don't know if you could say he had one of his best games of the year. It probably was one of his best games of the year. It was a game where he was more visible than
– And he had that dominant drive. There was that drive in the fourth quarter where it mattered, where he just took over.
Right, right. So he had a great finish. You know, Bruce Ellington, at the time, we didn't know he was going to leave. He had a great, great finish. You know, the young linebackers who were much maligned at the beginning of the year had a couple of interceptions late, played a good game. So, and then, you know, Spurrier at the end, it was just, I don't think that game or that day could have really gone any better.
The funny thing about the game from my standpoint, because I, you know, want to reiterate a lot of the things you were saying, that going in, I was a little bit hesitant. And it's because I knew exactly what was going to happen from Wisconsin. They did exactly what I was afraid they were going to do. What I didn't know, to borrow a phrase from another sport, is that we were just going to win anyway.
Right.
You know, they're going to cram it down our throats, make us look ridiculous for big segments of the game, but we're just going to win it anyway.
Right, right.
Well, you know, Connor just—I think I texted about this, and I think you referred to it in something, maybe a post that you did, Buck. But he just kept topping himself over and over. You know, just you think he's done doing these spectacular things, and then all of a sudden he comes out like with a game like that where he hits Ellington on. You know, a beautiful pass to start the scoring. He hits Roland on that fade pattern down the side. He hits Roland on the post pattern in the middle. He makes a great little first down pass to Davis when they think he's going to scramble. I mean, you're just like, what else can the guy do? I mean, it's a pretty amazing performance by Connor Shaw to sort of cap his career in the season.
Yeah, his career arc, I mean, it was probably... It was good up until the second half of the Missouri game, but yep. If somebody did a graph, I mean, from the second half of the Missouri game until the end of the Wisconsin game, it's just his stock is, you know, it's a hockey stick, you know, it's just straight up.
I can remember sitting in the stands at Bank of America Stadium,
his first start
against East Carolina, and halfway through that game, looking at my family and just saying, you know, I don't know what Spurrier's thinking. This, you know,
we've wasted a scholarship on this guy.
Right. I've never been known as having an eye for talent. So.
And he just turns out to be the best quarterback in the history of South Carolina, and that's another thing. And we've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast, and you know, all the other fans have talked about it too. It's just at the beginning of the season, we're talking about rotating quarterbacks. You know,
not we.
A lot of people were. A lot of people. You know, and well, even Spurrier said, "Yeah, we're going to get Dylan in there. He's going to get, you know, he'll get a series or two every game."
Right.
And then by the end, it's like, man, if Dylan comes in, we're in trouble.
I'm going to say something that you didn't think you'd ever hear me say, but I was listening to Clemson radio a couple days ago, and one of the hosts said the smartest and coolest thing I've ever heard said about Connor Shaw. He must have been plagiarizing a South Carolina fan. But he said, you know, Connor Shaw is going to take a shot at the NFL. I'm not really sure that's going to work out for him. And if he doesn't do that, I understand he's going to join the special forces. And he said, I'll tell you right now, I'll sleep better at night knowing Connor Shaw's protecting me.
That's the truth. I mean, that is the absolute truth. You know you're not going to get anything but his best effort. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. No matter what he's doing. And, you know, the end of the game. Well, talk to me about the game. It's been a week and a day now since we saw it. You know, tell me what stands out to you.
Well, I mean,
Either one of you.
We just went over the Shaw stuff, but I mean there were so many big plays in that game. It was just one big play after the other, and you start stringing them together, and like the fourth down pass to Bruce, the fourth down stop, the fourth and one when we stopped them,
right,
and took over on downs. Another huge play in the game.
Sherrod Golightly,
man,
right, who sat out the beginning of the game, but there's just big play after big play is what I remember. The hit by Victor Hampton, good grief, what a hit!
Right, clean hit and knock. And the thing is it was like Kill Bill Volume 2, where you know she gives him the punch that kills him an hour later.
The five finger death punch or whatever it is.
Right. He played the rest of that series and then he was done.
Yeah, I remember thinking, how did he get up and go on after that?
Tough kid.
And he didn't, you know. Right. But that hit. I mean, think about that hit after last year's hit. I mean, obviously it wasn't publicized like that, but that was about as hard a hit. Somebody.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I'll confess that we texted this. I don't know if G-Man texted it or I texted it, but one of us said that might be the worst thing that happened could happen to us is to knock their starting quarterback out.
Right.
Because it felt like when they ran the ball, they were unstoppable. But they were mixing in passes, you know, and it seems like they would stall whenever they tried to throw the football. And so, my thinking was, well, they're going to bring in this backup quarterback who's not worth a crap, you know, can't throw the football, and they're just going to pound us. You know, they're just going to pound us the rest of the game. But fortunately, you know, the defense really, really stepped up in the second half there.
And I think you've actually touched kind of the moral of this game, and that's you watched probably a good coach and a good play caller who knows he needs to mix in a pass every once in a while.
Right.
And then you watched a genius play caller.
Yeah.
You know, on our side. And it felt like to me, you know, Connor Shaw's given the great effort and Spurrier knew he had that tool out there. But some of those play calls, that pass to Jarrell Adams for the touchdown.
Yeah, yeah. That drag
pound,
route.
Pound, you know, out route. It was beautiful.
And that is that's a Busta Anderson play. And I'm wondering, why Jarrell got to run from that side. I thought that was interesting. But the trick play for the touchdown, what amuses me among a thousand other things about Steve Spurrier is he didn't necessarily run that play. You know, he was thinking less strategy and more about the novelty of getting Connor Shaw a receiving touch. Don't you get that feeling?
Well, that's the player. As he's, a player's coach,
he's more excited about the novelty of getting his all-time quarterback a reception for a touchdown than running a play that's going to win the game. Yep. You get that sense from him?
Absolutely. And somebody from ESPN or something tweeted shortly after that, does this team have more fun playing football than anybody you've ever seen or what?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just that's the feeling you get.
Let me say this, too, about the game plan and the way we ran the offense. It's sort of a familiar theme. Thinking back over the last couple of seasons, you think we're going to come out and establish the run. But have you noticed how, I guess a lot of teams, Spurrier's figured out that, you know, Wisconsin was weak against the pass, and they talked about that on the telecast. Spurrier figures this out. We come out throwing the ball and then mix in the run later. It's almost like we use the run in some ways as a way of finishing somebody off. Right. But we start out by wearing them out through the air. And boy, did we ever wear them out through the air. I mean, he knew what to do. And you know he loves it when he can get the passing game going and win that way. He just loves that kind of football.
Right.
You know, and you get two receivers going over 100 yards. That doesn't happen with us all the time. It doesn't happen with anybody all the time. But and we haven't mentioned the name of that second receiver who went over 100 yards, Shaq Rowland. Mm-hmm. I think he found Sidney Rice's gloves in the locker room and wore them to that game because he was catching everything.
Yeah, he just gets you excited about the possibilities, what he can do out there. He does. you know, he fits in that Sidney Rice, Alshon Jeffrey mold as a deep ball threat, a guy who can go up and get it. And, you know, the catch that he made in between those two guys down about down around the 10-yard line, I don't even know how that ball got to his hands.
Yep.
You know, you just you watch some plays and you're thinking, how did that defensive back just not accidentally get his hand on that and knock it down?
And the body control, because if you watch that catch, he goes up and gets it, snatches it out of the air, and then as he's falling, there's no, like, brace yourself for impact or whatever. He just kind of twists, and you see him just tuck the ball, you know, in midair.
Yeah.
It was one of those plays that reminded me of Sidney, because Sidney used to do that kind of thing.
Well, for a guy who only caught about 25, 26 catch balls on the year,
yeah,
how many of them were spectacular?
Right.
About half of them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty pretty cool and pretty exciting for next year. I know we're going to talk about next year a little bit later, but you know, he's got to be one of the prominent themes of that discussion.
Right.
But there are some negatives. I hate to rain on the parade. Let me play my role here.
Clapping monkey report.
The clapping monkey report. What is wrong with our special teams?
Yeah.
Is there a part of the special teams that we excel at right now? Because I can't think of it.
Elliott Fry is about it.
Yeah, the Fry's one.
Yep, but I'll say this. We went 11-2 3 years in a row with crappy special teams for the most part.
Yeah.
Okay? So you know, it can't be that bad if we're still winning.
Yeah, I don't remember the specifics of the game, but do you think we could have beaten Tennessee with a little bit better special teams?
I think our punt game was pretty bad in that game. Yeah, I mean, maybe, but I agree. It's not perfect, and it cost you some ball games. But, I mean, we're not great, but we still managed to win most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what you do to fix the – I don't know what you do to fix the special teams. I really don't.
That was this week's Clapping Monkey Report.
Bringing everybody down one topic at a time. just a fantastic way to end the season. The next day, when did Ellington declare? It wasn't the next day. It was a couple of days after that. But Bruce, I'll tell you, that snuck up on me. A lot of people haven't really talked about it. Whether they thought, the month before the Capital One Bowl, I'm thinking, man, Bruce Ellington is going to be a great number one receiver for us next year. You know, he's got, you know, all this experience. He's going to be a senior. He's going to be a force. And I wasn't even thinking about the NFL for him.
Yeah, I wasn't really thinking about it either, but I can tell you the exact nanosecond that it hit me and I realized it. It was between the time he tipped that ball on fourth down,
yeah,
and the moment that he actually caught it.
Yeah,
because the moment he caught it, I was like, NFL, he's gone. Because that just looked like a highlight reel.
Yeah.
Somebody said this to me when I was kind of moaning about it the other day at the office. Somebody said, you know, we got 6 seasons out of that guy.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, you know.
I think that someone was me.
No, it wasn't you, but you may have said it, but somebody else said it to me. We got 6
seasons. Yeah, like you could get into his office.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Please.
Right. So
get, you know, past his secretary's secretary.
Feel a little greedy wanting more than what we got out of him.
I'm all for him going and getting his at this point.
Yep.
And it was funny. I was thinking about what kind of pro he would be, and you know, he's probably going to be a slot guy. And I was trying to think of somebody to compare him to in the NFL. So I hope everybody's sitting down, because I'm going to tell you the type of receiver I think he can be is Wes Welker.
Yeah.
So I'm probably the first person to ever compare a black dude to Wes Welker. Because normally only white dudes get compared to Wes Welker, but I think
right.
I think a slot guy, you know, one of the descriptions of Ellington I saw was he's very quick in small spaces, which is a Welker trait, and the Julian Edelman is the same way. Another guy's Hines Ward. I think he's you know, Hines Ward bulked up a little bit once he got to the NFL, and I think that's another guy you can look at and say that's the type of player Bruce Ellington could be in the NFL.
Well, I'll say this. I was throwing a little cold water on the possibility of him going pro. But after that game, watching him just go off in the Capital One Bowl, I got to reconsider and say, you know what, I think I may be wrong about that. I mean, he looked like a polished pro in that game.
Hey, Buck, can you timestamp this right here?
Yeah.
The G-Man just admitted he was wrong.
Wow. This is a groundbreaking podcast for us.
I mean, that's twice in my life I've done that.
The first time was becoming friends with us.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. Well, where were we? Bruce Ellington. Yeah. So, any more thoughts on the game? I want to get to the post game festivities. So nothing else on the game itself. So, first of all, Spurrier has a conversation with Tom Luginbill.
Lugie.
I guess nobody else thought that was as funny as I did, because they're done with it. So I said, "All right, thanks, Coach. All right, thank you, Lugie." And then I can't remember who was doing the play-by-play. The play-by-play guy got a kick of it. He goes, "All right, Lugie," and then you could hear him kind of laugh.
Well, you just know that's going to stick, you know.
Yeah. And then we need Vine. What is Vine? It's like 6 seconds. Doesn't Instagram have video? Isn't it like 12 or 15 seconds or something?
Yeah.
We need to Instagram the video of Spurrier. I cannot stop laughing when I watch him. that whole thing is like a Saturday Night Live skit. Because the guy...
After Lugie when he gets up on
after
the
After Lugie. When he's up on the stage. And first of all, the guy from from Capital One... I don't know if he's just like
the stiffest guy in America,
or he's really, really drunk and he's trying to look like he's not drunk or something. The Capital One Bowl, and
he was concentrating very hard not to make a mistake.
Finally, right. Spurrier just kind of walks over there like he's going to put him out of his misery and grabs a microphone, hold it with kind of like three fingers.
Yeah, he looks behind Lugie and he goes to grab the microphone and then he says, "Oh, that's not time yet." So I had to, and then he like rests his hand on the table behind him. And then the Capital One dude tries to hand him the trophy, and he reaches back and grabs the microphone from Lugie, and is like, "No, just put that down. I got something to say, you know." And he talks about, "Couldn't have done it without y'all. I tell you what, these back-to-back Capital One Bowl wins are great, but that state championship ain't bad either."
But I'm telling you, the joy in his eyes, that's the genuine real deal right there. He was so happy, and he wanted to just be happy with our fans.
Giddy.
And he knew the quickest way to our heart.
And make fun
of Clemson.
And then when they introduce Connor Shaw as the MVP, he grabs the microphone back, and he goes, "Best quarterback ever at South Carolina.
I'm going to let you finish, but."
It was just great. And you know, that just burned the Clemson fans up. And I even saw some Carolina fans were like, "Well, you know, he didn't know the camera was on him, or he didn't know, you know, he didn't know they were still broadcasting."
Because the opposite was true.
Normally they cut away. I'm like, no. Don't diminish this. He knew every move he was making. I mean, it was all very calculated. And it's just fantastic. So, yeah. Great Capital One Bowl. So that was on, what, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday comes, and we get to watch Clemson and Ohio State in the Orange Bowl. So they win, and pretty much all hell breaks loose. I mean, they beat an Ohio State team that, for the better part of 2 3/4 years, people have been saying they haven't played anybody. You know, they haven't played a top 25 team. They're playing in the Big Ten. They're not very good. And, you know, all of a sudden Clemson has beaten this elite team. They win a BCS bowl game. They win the Orange Bowl. You know, all these things that South Carolina has never done. And the talking points just immediately. And I was the one that was up on Twitter until like 2 a.m. I guess you guys went to bed. But
right.
it was just a madhouse of Gamecock and Tiger fans going back and forth at each other, and it just kind of kicked off the week. You know, it kind of things just escalated from there. So I don't know. I don't want to talk too much about the Clemson game because we're going to talk about some more Clemson stuff as we go along. But you know, some BCS bowl wins. Central Florida wins their BCS game, which helps us look good because we beat Central Florida. You know, a lot of teams lost in front of us, and I really didn't think. You know, I thought we'd probably wind up 6. If things really went well for us, 5. I thought 5 was our absolute ceiling. I thought Oklahoma would jump us, or, you know, Alabama wouldn't fall behind us, or, you know. But once Auburn lost to Florida State and those rankings came back out on the next day and we were number 4, I was just like, I had to kind of sit there and kind of stare at it for a little while, you know, because it was
kind of shocking to see. It really was. 4, and you're just kind of like, really?
Yeah.
That's us?
Right, yeah. Yeah, to finish that high.
Here's the question, though. Where would you have ranked us?
I think 4 was probably about right. Because, I, you know, we beat Missouri. You know, there were some people saying Missouri probably shouldn't have finished behind us. Maybe Missouri was a better team. Maybe they were, but we beat them. So we finished ahead of them. I didn't have a problem with Alabama falling behind us. I mean, who else was there?
Right, and that's kind of what I ended up realizing when you look at that ranking. It's like, well, Michigan State, probably number 3.
Yeah.
And then after that Auburn Florida State game, it's hard to really drop either of those. You know.
So the Auburn
strong. Yeah, we finished on such a great run that really kind of put us in that position.
Yeah. The Auburn Florida State game kind of added to the fire that was lit after the Orange Bowl, you know, the ACC SEC thing. And I'll tell you how I feel about that. I am thrilled that we're in the SEC. Absolutely. We wouldn't be anywhere near where we are probably in any sport except for maybe basketball. If we weren't in the SEC, I mean the SEC is the reason that we finished number 4, that we've won baseball national championships. I mean, so happy and proud to be in the SEC. But I'll tell you, I wasn't necessarily pulling for Auburn the other night. You know, at the end of the day, I want what's best for the University of South Carolina. I don't want what's best for the SEC and Auburn winning. Some people say, oh, that's more money. Or it's more prestige, or it's more – I just don't see it.
Yeah, and it was the swan song for the BCS, and had Auburn won, it would have been too easy to write all the lazy sports stories about how the BCS was skewed in the SEC's favor, and that's over with, and it's a new day. And, you know, it didn't matter. It didn't matter to us, really. I perfunctorily, you know, pulled for Auburn up until the moment Cam Newton introduced their quarterback, and then I immediately hated them again.
Right, right. So.
Well, that's the thing. I had to hold my nose to sort of pull for them, you know, not very, very lightly, because I've just never had any respect for the program.
And
it's hard to pull for a program that you just perceive as one of the dirtiest programs in the history of college football. I know their fans would go, oh my gosh, everybody's in the same boat. We just got caught. Kind of what the North Carolina fans are saying now about their scandal-ridden program up there. But I just have a hard time pulling for them. But I kind of did. But I'm like you guys. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, I was back and forth. But
it was a good football game. It was fun to watch.
Good game, yeah.
But it's a major, major Clemson talking point,
right?
That we, you know, we rely on the SEC, and that we, you know, claim the SEC national championships. We hadn't won jack squat. Okay, we've won bowl games, and we finished number 4 in the country. We didn't win any of those national championships. Our conference did, and it was good for us from a financial standpoint, and it's good publicity. But you know, it. we haven't won a national title.
but this is what it is, and this is where the anxiety all comes from. G-Man, as much as I hate to say it, wrote a pretty good blog post on this.
Mm.
The SEC, like you say, it's the reason we've passed them.
Right.
They know that.
Yeah.
You know, we're ahead of them now as a program, and as much as they might like to say, well, we want a BCS, but, you know, like Spurrier said, we didn't get to play in it because we're in a conference that, you know,
right,
doesn't allow it. So we've the reason we've passed them is that we're in the SEC, and I know that's driving them crazy, and they're grasping for whatever. What you're seeing right now is that kind of final realization, that desperate realization that they're about to become, you know, locally irrelevant.
And they're lashing out.
Yeah.
But I want to know, where are all these Gamecock fans that they keep talking about? Where are all these Gamecock fans that are upset and disappointed with our performance? Have you guys met these people?
I haven't.
What performance? What are we talking about?
Our overall performance. I mean, there's evidently, if you listen to the contingent, you know, the upstate contingent, there's all these Gamecock fans that are just disappointed with our lack of championships. Well, you know what? I'm ecstatic where we are. This is amazing. I mean, the fact that we've won 33 ball games and lost 6 in the last 3 years combined, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, the fact that there would be a disappointed Gamecock fan out there because we haven't won the SEC or the national championship is just preposterous.
It's preposterous. It's only those guys. Maybe they're out there, and like you're saying, I haven't talked to anybody saying this. But yeah, if they're saying this, they didn't sit in the East Upper and freeze their butts off while Florida was killing us in, you know, 95.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't watch Brinson Buckner or whoever step on our players and say, you know, get some talent.
Right. Yeah.
In whatever year that was. They didn't go through 0-21 or whatever. We should be beside ourselves with just giddy. We should be Dabo like with excitement right now.
Well,
and we kind of are. I mean, this has been a fun week. I mean, this has been a really fun, and Clemson winning, I think, has actually made it more fun. You know,
yeah,
because
they didn't just completely turtle and hide. You know,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, going back to the day of our game, since we'll talk a little bit about the rivalry now. I told you guys I went to some friends' house. They're Auburn fans. They went out to Pasadena to the bowl game and everything, but they invited us over on New Year's Day to watch the game. And before the game started, we were just sitting around having a conversation, and we were talking about football and rivalries. And they said, "Now, who's your big rival?" And I said, "Well, it's Clemson." And then, "Oh, yeah, Clemson." And somehow the conversation led to, and I said, "You know, the Clemson folks really believe they're an elite program." And when I, you know, they're up there with Alabama and Notre Dame and Southern Cal and all these traditional powers. Wow. And they both got this pained look on their face. And they're both just like, their brows were furrowed, and they looked at, and the wife looked at me, and she said, "What?" She said, "Are you serious?" Now Auburn fans are smug and, you know, believe their poo does not stink.
They believe Cam's poo does not stink.
But they were disgusted by the thought that Clemson thinks that they're an elite program. Elite is the word.
As if any one single victory could put them in that position.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they seem to think that, okay, now.
Yeah.
Okay, we're nationally relevant now. You know.
So after that game, and we're kind of bouncing around here a little bit. So after the Clemson win and just the explosion on Twitter, and Clemson fans jumping up and down and waving their arms about BCS and Orange Bowl and the fact that the Orange Bowl victory means more than losing 5 in a row to your hated rival. That idea that we don't care about losing 5 in a row to you as long as we can win a BCS game. Are you kidding me?
Right.
You know, I mean, the shoe is not on the other foot, but I can't see that. I don't understand it. So, you know, at some point during the day, I just had this vision in my head of a Clemson fan wildly waving his arms to a South Carolina fan, you know, screaming all these talking points at him. And the Carolina fan, all you have to say back to them is, we beat you. And we beat you again, and we beat you again, and we beat you again. So my wife's a graphic designer. So I went to her and I said, look, I got this idea. You know, I'm going to do a blog post and I want to do like a little cartoon strip. And so could you draw some cartoon characters for me? And she said, no. I said, what do you mean? She said, no, you're just drawing like stick figure type. And I said, yeah. She goes, no, I'm not doing that. You can do that. You can draw a stick figure. My stick figure is not going to look any better. You know, she's all uppity about her graphic design, right, which she should be. She's excellent at what she does. So she did not want to draw stick figures. So I sat down at the computer and I drew these stick figures and I slapped some logos and, you know, put the thought bubbles.
At what point did the stick figures start making you laugh?
I was kind of laughing at them in my head, you know, as I was like, you know, this might be pretty good. This might be kind of funny. And, you know, I told the guys before we started taping, you know, I posted it at like 11 o'clock at night and went to, you know, brush my teeth and get ready for bed. And I came back and in 20 minutes we had like 1,000 hits. And I was like, this might be big. So, and so for those of you listening, probably know, I mean, the state newspaper picked it up and all this kind of stuff. So it was a lot of fun, but it just kind of, I tried to encompass, you know, everything that's going on in this discussion going back and forth. And I just don't see, I think there are like three levels of fan. And this is Clemson fan and South Carolina fan. There's this group of fans that pull for, you know, if you're a Clemson fan, you pull for South Carolina, you're South Carolina. We all just need to get along faction.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've had comments from a few of those. We just need to respect each other. And we need to be glad that both teams are having this success. And we need to, and I just don't get that.
No.
And I'm wondering from what place that comes from. Because I'm a competitor, you know, and I know G-Man is a competitor. And I know T-Bone is a competitor. And I don't like to lose at anything, you know. So I'm not going to have Clemson fan talking smack to me without fighting back.
Love it.
So I can't see if that's fine, you know, I'm happy for
it's,
you guys.
It's good for the state of South Carolina.
It's good for the state.
Yeah.
So then there's this middle faction, this kind of moderate. And I think I would put us in the moderate category. You know, it doesn't consume us. Even though we have a blog and we write cartoons and stuff like that. So it sounds silly for me to say it doesn't consume us when it obviously kind of consumes us. But we're not the lunatic fringe, you know. And South Carolina fans, there's a lunatic fringe. And the Clemson fans, there's a lunatic fringe. The issue that I have with the Clemson folks that are in the lunatic fringe is they're journalists and they're radio hosts and they're... That's the area that I can't really figure out, you know, because when you see, say, a Chris Clark at Gamecock Central or John Whittle at the Big Spur, or you listen to these radio hosts in Columbia, yeah, I mean, even the guys who are writing for the Gamecock blogs have a professionalism about them, you know. The dude for Clemson, the Clemson Insider, as soon as the Orange Bowl was over, his first tweet in all caps was, "Eat it, Spurrier."
Right. No, it was.
"Eat it, Spurrier," from a guy who's a professional, who is a writer, and I think he's a radio host too. And those are the people that get me fired up, and I have to try to, and I think T-Bone's going to help us out there with...
Yeah, I'm working on something, and I don't want to drop it prematurely here. But I think the phrase Clemsoning, you know, has reached the Urban Dictionary. It's going to be my goal to make Quawk Talk the same kind of thing.
Right.
Quawk Talk, after Quackenbush, the upstate radio personality. I think his first name is William.
Yeah.
William Quackenbush. he actually was on Twitter just before the Capital One Bowl defending domestic violence aggressors. You know, he was saying, well, no, it was a Clemson guy, so yeah, he had a right to hit the girl with a towel bar. I mean, once you get to that level of lunatic fringe quack talk, I don't even know how we can continue.
Now, I think you might be getting your lunatic Clemson bloggers mixed up. Wasn't that James Thurn who was...
Oh, my goodness, was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
You might be right.
But they're kind of the same guy.
To Quawk Talk, you're, William Quackenbush, you're crazy for a whole different reason.
Right. Yeah, he was basically, the Thurn guy was basically saying, I know things about this case that you don't know and that I can't talk about. So he was defending himself. So this Division I football player was defending himself from a woman.
And needed to use an iron bar, but was justified.
Had to use a towel bar. And
that's when objectivity is not even in the same universe that you're in at that point, you know?
Right.
You will excuse anything in orange, which actually they should put that on Dabo's resume.
Yeah.
You will need to excuse anything in orange.
Yeah.
Guys, let me jump in here and say something. What I see from observing the given take on this debate or over the airwaves, all this banter back and forth, coming from their side, the lunatic fringe faction, if you will, they know that they're back into a corner now. I mean, they know we're clearly the better program. We've clearly dominated them now for 5 years in a row, double-digit wins. Just, you know, every game we've won, we're higher ranked now every year. They sense it slipping away, and so they're coming out fighting. You know, they've got the claws out because they see desperation. It's time for that. So all they can do at this point is denigrate our program. There's no objective way to say we're the better program, and they can't point to any evidence.
Right.
So it's just tear down, try to make us feel bad, which we just said a few minutes ago, it's impossible to make us feel bad about our team.
Yeah.
Because of where we are and what we've accomplished. So, you know, good luck with that. But all they're going to do is tear down our accomplishments and point to this, you know, the perpetual history argument, which it's just baffling. And I've a couple times I've said, it really reminds me of this kind of the kid on the schoolyard who just keeps coming back for more, and they keep kicking him and he keep knocking him down and he keeps getting back up, and everybody laughs at the kid, you know, and they're like,
right,
you know, stop.
It's like it sounds like you're describing Dabo again.
Yeah. And that's another thing is Spurrier against Dabo and this back and forth. Here you got Spurrier is one of the great innovators in the history of college football. And, you know, people say he's a jerk and he's petty and he's childish and he needs to grow up and he holds grudges and fine. I'm okay with all of that. Say all those things about him and give me 11 wins a year.
Right.
But he makes it fun, though, isn't
he? He does. He absolutely does. And that's another.
Isn't this still football? Isn't this still a game amongst a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old kids?
Right.
I mean, aren't we supposed to be having fun here? Spurrier keeps it fun, okay?
He does.
These guys up there, I mean, you would think this is life and death to some of these people. This is supposed to be fun. Spurrier makes you laugh. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, the seriousness and the gravity that some of the commentary you're getting out of these guys. Now that they see that we passed them. I mean, they can't stand it.
So, yeah, I was thinking about that. You know, Georgia fans hate Spurrier for good reason, because he beat and needled them for the entire decade of the 90s. And Clemson fans are getting to be like Georgia fans. There's no way they can find any humor in anything that he does or respect him for his abilities in any way. But everybody else... And I say that brushing very broadly, because I know, you know, you could, I'm sure you could pick out some Florida fans love him.
Tennessee fans.
Tennessee fans, yeah. Not big fans there. But the media, aside from a Ron Morris here and there, they love him. How many times have you heard how good Steve Spurrier is for the game of college football?
Every time I watch
and it's just like, oh my God, college football is not going to be as fun when he's you know, retires, when he leaves. And it's just true. And then you've got Dabo. And Dabo, somehow, he's a great recruiter. We don't know if he knows jack squat about X's and O's. He's got a couple of really good coordinators. Why does his name never get mentioned for any of these jobs that come open? You know, people talked about him for Texas and said, and, you know, he was. I saw him on one list. Somebody listed like 25 candidates for the Texas job, and he was like number 18. And it said, well, this is not going to happen, but we figured we better put his name on here anyway.
Well, I found something on the web where there was a link to a Texas fan blog about that, and there was a whole line of responses about Dabo being a candidate. You should have read it. I mean, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, these folks, they completely understand what he is and how he is where he is, and they were just like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, it was classic reading, and it had me just in stitches for, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes reading it. So yeah. Anyway, that's why you asked the question. That's why, because everybody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a couple of questions from Twitter. One of them, Michael D. Fuller, who is one of my favorite people on Twitter, and he was one of the guys that was right there in the mix after the Orange Bowl, going after these guys, and I think he's probably been blocked by all of them because he was ripping them a new one. He says, "Can you explain?" and puts in quote marks, "national relevance," and that's one of the talking points that Clemson keeps throwing out there, is how Dabo's made them nationally relevant, but somehow we're not, because we haven't played in a BCS game, or we haven't won a conference championship.
Well, a couple points there. One is, I would just refer to Jesse Palmer's comments before the Orange Bowl the other night, where he said they were our little brother.
Right.
You know, which is just, as far as I'm concerned, folks, just let's refer to them as our little brothers from now on, forever.
And that was on ESPN, and he is a national commentator, right?
Right, so that was a national perspective. But the other way to look at this, and I actually have already said this in the podcast tonight because I was thinking about this question, you can claim national relevance if you don't if you're locally irrelevant. You know, when that's all you have left, it's very hard to disprove your national relevance. It's just, it's all they've got left to argue, and they're running out of arguments.
Yeah. So another question, Matt Riddle says, why did we lose to Tennessee? Why? With multiple question marks. And I don't know, Matt. That's a mystery.
It was a field position game, if you'll recall. And
it was indeed a field position game. So, you know, the whole Clemson thing, and we try to be a Gamecock blog, and we try to talk about Gamecock sports, and it's just, the rivalry has been so front and center this last week. I know we've talked a lot about Clemson, and some of y'all get sick of that, and that's fine. We try to balance things out, but we do try to have fun with it. I think more than any, and we try to, I don't personally try to get in arguments with people on Twitter or on our blog, or if you look at the cartoon blog post, we've got like 100 comments of people just going back and forth. And finally, at the end of it, I just kind of said, hey, thanks for coming. You know, we appreciate your opinion. And because it just becomes one big circle, you know what, chasing each other around, saying the same thing over and over. So, but I think T-Bone's going to take care of one of those on a blog post he's got coming up.
You keep pimping that blog post.
Well, I told him I'm waiting for it, kind of like you wait for a summer blockbuster to come out.
Right.
By the way, anticipation.
I rechecked our favorites during one of G-Man's speeches here in the last 10 minutes, and it was Quawk Talk.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. It wasn't James Turn. It was Quawk Talk.
All right. Well, then it's my bad. I apologize, Mr. Thurn. Turn. Quawk Talk. Oh, man. That blog post he wrote is just...
It's golden.
It is gold. Absolute. So, well, we're about an hour in. We were going to talk a little bit about 2014. Maybe we'll save that for the next podcast.
Hey, it's only 8 weeks till spring practice starts.
It is. Well, we got some basketball. No, we're not going to talk about basketball. You know, I was proud of the guys last night down at Florida. Did you watch that game, G-Man?
I did not. I missed that one.
Yeah. Well, they were down 14-1, I think, and then were down double digits most of the first half, and then cut it down to single digits, had it down to like 8 at one point in the second half, and were actually playing pretty well, and Florida made a big run to finish them off.
Let me say this. My wife just got back from watching the Lady G's knock off Kentucky. The Lady G's have it going on.
Yeah, just looking at our timeline, it sounded like it was a pretty good crowd there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So go ahead, Don Staley.
Any update on the Horsecocks?
No, I think they're in a hiatus here for a little while. I think they have a fall season and a spring season. So I should know that by now, since we're kind of the official podcast of the Horsecocks. I don't know that they know that, but right. We'll just call ourselves that.
We always have been.
And I think probably based on what's happened on our blog this week, we have a lot of new listeners. The Horsecocks are the USC equestrian team, and we do try to remain a family-friendly blog and podcast as much as we can, although sometimes we falter. Wouldn't you say?
Nope.
T-Bone doesn't falter at all. He's a golden boy. So, all right, big week, fun week. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for coming to the blog this week. It has been a lot of fun. Great season for the Gamecocks. Number 4 finish, 11-2 for the third consecutive year, and we got a lot of good things to look forward to in 2014. So, gentlemen, any final words?
We're going to give any rubber chicken awards out.
Ah, jeez. Yeah, I guess we should. I was wrapping the show up. I forgot all about the Blitz Jewelry Rubber Chicken Awards. You got somebody in mind since you're bringing
it
up?
I just felt like we should let's just mention Blitz Jewelry.
We'll hit them real quick. I'll go first and give it to Bruce Ellington.
That's a good call.
Yep, good call.
T-Bone?
I'm going to give it to Shaq Rowland.
Shaq Rowland?
Showing up big in a big game.
Well, since Connor Shaw has gotten so many rubber chicken awards, he probably doesn't have room in his trophy case for any more rubber chicken awards. So I'm going to give mine to the Capital One Bowl representative who handed out the trophy at the end of the game last Wednesday.
Hey, how about we give an extra one to the HBC? You know?
Yeah. He gets a lifetime rubber chicken award.
I don't think he's ever gotten one. And what a job!
Yeah. Somebody get word to him that we gave him that, because he will be excited.
He might give us a game ball.
No, he might.
I only gave out 2 game balls. I gave one to myself and one to the rubber chickens.
I won a lot in my career, but this is my first time ever getting a rubber chicken award. How about that? Did you know that, Loogie?
Thank you, Loogie.
Loogie.
We should we should box up a rubber chicken and send it to the athletic office.
Right.
And it'll probably
some kind of list.
We'll probably get something on the news. A bomb squad is at the.
Just make sure you put T-Bone's name on it. Okay?
Right. All right, guys. Thanks. Thanks again for joining us. Visit us at therubberchickensblog.com. You can find us on Twitter at @rubberchickens. That's R-U-B-R chickens. You know, before we sign off, I'd like to remind you folks, it has now been 1,869 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. I am Buck for T-Bone and the G-Man. We will talk to you soon.